Live from Burbank, California, land of exuberant optimism, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's a victim of aggressive bookkeeping. Mark Maron.
Thank you. Happy 5th of July. That counts, doesn't it? Happy 5th of July, the day after Independence Day, the day where we can maybe get some sleep, man. What is it with people in this part of the world and those firecrackers? Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, need machines, pain sponges. This is number 8 of 8 more shows. I'm sorry to announce, if you didn't read the blog, that the Mark Maron Show will be screeching to a halt next Friday. Not my choice of headquarters. No longer want to subsidize this show in lieu of another offer they have made me. I have one choice, and we'll see how that pans out. But for now, I am sad because this show is just starting to get going. The hours were good. I think people are enjoying it. And again, I am being given like, well, here's this, or else go back to Siberia. Go back. I've got other things going on, damn it. I've got a stand-up career. I've got, you know, TV pitches in me. I've one-man show, a book. I got cats that need caring for. There's things. Jim, you?
Mark, I have an announcement to make.
Oh, no. Yeah. Is this your last day?
No, but okay. 8 more shows.
Yeah.
After that, I will be taking over the co-anchor spot with Sam Cedar.
Congratulations.
Right. Yeah.
That's great.
Significant pay increase, benefits, lots of opportunities, a lot of buzz, a lot of boffo B.O.
That's great, man.
A lot of things happening for me.
But what show is that?
It's going to be the Jim Earl Sam Cedar Show. I think we're going to call it Morning with Jim Earl and Sam Cedar.
Now, Jim, is that really happening?
It's right now. As we speak, it is happening right now.
Really, this is it, huh?
In my head. Right now.
How's the show going?
So far, it's pretty good. But you know, Sam's kind of ill prepared. He's got a whine. He's getting, you know, when he really gets excited, he's got that. He's talking. I can't even. What is that? Mickey Mouse?
It's called
talking.
It's called cedaring. It's actually in the radio dictionary now. It's when you cedar, you reach sort of a fevered pitch of a passionate wonkiness.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of like, it propels and ends with a deafening halt. And then we'll be right back, is how that usually works.
The VU meters are right in the red constantly.
But let's not let the, once again, the horrendous disappointment available to us at this company distract us from our agenda, man. We've got 8 more shows. They're going to be as power packed as our enthusiasm will allow us to be. We'll see how that manages. Yeah, 'cause we had a good deal happening, but they're not going to syndicate it. And that's just the way it is. As for the other offer, it's a stretch. If they meet a couple of conditions, it'll happen. I'll know in a couple days, and I'll give you the whole sad story of what's happening. Jim and I will be. There are some other possibilities out there in terms of radio that I've investigated. So I'll reinvestigate those. And we'll try to keep you abreast of the situation. If you would like to sign up for the mailing list, which I think still exists at markmaron.com for the time being, now I have to figure out how the hell to get my website back if this all falls through from Air America. But you can go to markmaron.com and sign up for my mailing list. My MySpace doesn't seem to be working for some reason.
How long has it not been working?
It's been not working for a while. I mean, I can look at it and I can read it, but I can't respond to emails or send emails out. It's very unnerving. I've let them know at MySpace, and they've told me that they're working on it, but I don't know if they are. Let's talk about the show tonight. A lot of great things happened today. Ken Lay died, which is great in one respect, but it's not. He should have been publicly shot or publicly executed with an audience of all the people who he bilked out of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars individually, not to mention pension plans for millions of dollars, billions of dollars for people he compromised in his greed. So in a sense that he got off easy. He was facing multiple decades in jail for fraud, for basically stealing money, lying to employees, lying to people whose pensions were in Enron. It's a whole list of crimes. But this guy, you know, drops dead in snow mass on some sort of vacation at his vacation house, you know, without really fully paying the price for the crimes he committed against people who believed in his company and for people that are incredibly compromised financially because of his actions and Jeff Skilling's actions and whoever else was guilty there at the top of that company. So it's good that he's dead. I'm happy that he's dead. And I wish that there was a more public display of his deadness, and that I just don't know if this is going to satisfy the people who are rightfully angry at him. And I don't believe in the death penalty. Well, even though I just said this guy should have been executed. I guess I'm using that as a metaphor. Man, going back on my words, you know what I'm saying. It would have been nice to see him rot in jail. How's that? Yeah. Although I've talked about corporate criminals being publicly executed before. They do that in China, you know. They don't screw around in China. Mm-mm. If you screw a bunch of people out of their money, you get your head cut off in public. And not that you know, that doesn't mean that people get their money back, but at least say...
Then they go after their family.
Yeah?
They get money out of their family, which is hopefully what we'll do with the lay family.
Well, it seems like the settlement wasn't enough to really compensate those who were screwed.
No.
It was like $45 million, yeah. $43 million. I mean, what is that really going to do? Who is that really going to help? I guess employees. But what happens to the people that had their 401ks invested in, their companies who were invested in Enron heavily? What happens to those people? You know what I'm saying,
Jim? They're screwed. They're left out in the cold. They're, you know, that's what it is. By the way, do not invest anything in a 401k.
Don't?
Never, ever do that.
I have not done it in a long time since I've been an independent contractor. But then what happens is it's all up to you. So you've got to you've got to start your own kind of pension thing to protect the money from taxing and kind of trust yourself to put money in it that you're not supposed to touch till you're 55. But just try getting divorced and going bankrupt. See what happens to that money. I guess I'll pay those taxes because I need to eat and stuff, man. Yeah, so there's a catch to everything. Stock market's no good. And I'm a little disappointed. I tell you today, I'm a little disappointed in Joe Biden. I'm always disappointed in Joe Biden. I got nothing but I don't have a lot of love for Joe Biden. But Barbara Boxer, I got a little love for. Ken Salazar, these are people that are going to campaign for Joe Lieberman. Now, Joe Lieberman is pulling a douchebag move in a way. He is... to avoid humiliation in the primaries, which he might lose against Ned Lamont, he might lose the Democratic primary because he's basically a Republican, because he's basically a pro-war, you know, ass-kisser that wants nothing more than approval from Republicans. So in order to avoid humiliation in the primary, he's rallying to get a petition together that will enable him to run as an independent in November, which means that the primaries will have no effect on him. Why doesn't he just run as a Republican? I hope to hell this guy loses, and I don't want to waste too much anger on somebody who calls himself a Democrat, because there's enough anger to go around with Republicans. But this guy's a first-rate douchebag, and this is just a political move for him to feel entitled to that Senate seat. But I hope to hell that this guy Lamont, who seems like a decent fellow, just tears him a new one. Now let's move on to some email. If we could, because I think this is important, Jim. If we have amends to make, we're going to have to do it. But let me tell you who's on the show, okay? Joe Keithley. If you don't know Joe Keithley, what is this? Yeah, Joe Keithley is the lead singer of DOA. Dead on Arrival, my friend. Do you know that band?
Oh, yeah.
Were you a fan of them?
I wasn't that familiar with them, no. I was like late 70s, like The Jam and The Clash.
This is a Kennedys. Yeah, Canadian punk band around that time.
Yeah.
Not that familiar with them myself, but they were seminal. They were the original Canadian punk band going back to 1978. He's going to be on. He's going to be doing some political rally. Not really political rally, an interesting thing up in Canada later this weekend, where all the draft dodgers, what did you call them that? People who sought amnesty during the Vietnam War, who became permanent residents of Canada, are all going to meet and hang out at this concert, and also some of the newer people who are seeking that type of amnesty, but Canada is not so quick to give out. But Joe Keithley is going to talk to us about that. He's involved with that. He's also the author of I Bleephead. I would go ahead and say it, but there's no reason to, you know, I don't want the chances of getting through to happen. So I'm just going to say I Bleephead because I don't want to pay the price for a sh**. Do you understand? Okay. It's I sh**head. Damn it. I bleephead. A Life in Punk. This is how I got in trouble the last time. Also, Reza Safarnijad. I hope I pronounced that right. If I did, I'd be so excited. Who's the author of Veiled Souls with his wife. This is a very sad and powerful story by Katrine Kasiri and Reza Safarnijad, a married couple, about her struggle to get out of Iran during the revolution and her life. John Amato is going to be with us up next, of course, from Crooks and Liars, who is our friend. We will, I guess we'll get into this email in a little while. I want to leave Mr. Amato a little time. And folks, please, try not to have a long face. You know, I can't breathe properly because of this. Let's talk briefly about the 4th of July, could we?
Sure.
Because you live in Echo Park, I live in Highland Park, two primarily Latino districts, and I don't want to be, you know, racist, which I don't think this is, or stereotyping, but can I say that the Mexicans like their fireworks? Can I say that without...
What about the Roman Catholics? How about that? Roman
That's
Catholics
fine.
Love their fireworks.
The Roman Catholics love their fireworks.
They love their Roman candles.
I just went out on the stoop, and my house sort of overlooks Highland Park, which in the flats is primarily... do they still use the word barrio? Is that a bad word? Let's say bad neighborhood. Can we say that? Is that wrong? But it is primarily Latino, and I embrace their culture and everything they stand for, because Los Angeles is a Latino city. But, man, you just stand out in the front yard, and you're like, where the hell did they get that kind of firework? Is that even legal? Because they're not even legal.
It's not legal. Since World War II, it hasn't been legal in Los Angeles. You can't have... You know what?
I got a break with you. They're getting in.
It's annoying. The whole thing annoyed me. It's just... Hey, what? We're going now?
No, we'll talk about it more in a
minute. Oh, man.
Because I want to hear how you got annoyed, and I also want to tell you the reason why I love it. I wasn't annoyed.
Like things that annoy me.
No, it's one day a year, and the kids are having a good time. And
These are grown men out there with bombs.
As long as the grown men aren't sticking an M80 up my cat's butt and blowing it up, I'm cool with it. We'll be back with John Amato.
Now he's confusing the markets with his rate changes. Mark Maron.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. It's the Mark Maron Show, the last of eight. Eight more? Is this the...
No, this is seven more after this.
Okay, how would you say that? It's one in the last of eight. Is something like that? Is that what makes sense?
It's eight in the last of eight.
This is number eight in the last of eight. No, this is
number one in the last of...
Why does this keep happening to me?
I think don't worry.
I'm a talented guy.
You're going to bounce it back. You always do.
I'm a talented guy. I've been working so hard. Okay, so.
You don't need that kind of reinforcement from people.
John Amato. We'll talk to him in a minute. But I put it on hold because he seemed pretty worked up about this 4th of July thing.
Echo Park. Echo Park has a lake in there. Right?
Well, that's so you can run if you catch yourself on fire, blowing up a firework.
More than that. They've got like 50 geese and duck in there, little geese families. They got like 30 turtles living in that pond.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, grown men go out there with rockets. These are real rockets.
Yeah.
You go to Pomona Fairgrounds or something and pay $30 to see those kind of fireworks. Bombs going... Blam, 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 blam. Since sundown.
RPGs and IEGs?
8 hours, yes. Literally.
IEGs.
It's a war zone.
Yeah, right. They actually have the rocket-propelled grenades. A couple of copters went down here in L.A. I think a traffic copter went down from an RPG. And then there was several middle-aged men who you talk about injured in an improvised explosive device along the roadside in Echo Park, along the lake. Yeah,
I hope so. You know, the only thing I could live with hearing all those explosions if every once in a while I'd hear, ow, along with it.
That would
make me kind of happy. But, you know, it's just annoying and nerve-wracking. And, what you know, do they even know what the hell 4th of July is about?
Sure they do.
Yeah, it's about establishing rights for white people, rich white people.
Uh-huh.
Well, are they going to celebrate that with bombs and stuff?
Look, I got to be honest with you. Yeah, when was the last time you shot off a rocket or blew something up? Really? When was the last time?
Yeah, I don't do it in the middle of the street.
But when was the last
time? Kids really? Walking by.
It's one day a year, Jim. I understand your criticism.
Well, do it in the fairground. Go someplace.
The fairgrounds.
Yeah, you know how many.
The hell are you talking
Elysian
about?
Park has great fireworks there. Dodger Stadium.
But that's a professional doing it.
Yeah.
But do you know what it's like? The mischief and the excitement. You go out, you buy your illegal fireworks. You spend like $500 on things that are going to blow up.
$500, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, okay, they wait for this. They have a special little fund, a cookie jar in their kitchen, like the firework fund. You go out, you spend $500 on the top-notch stuff for a good 2 hours of pure explosive fun. Man, when was the last time you felt that thrill? Never.
When I ran over somebody with my car.
A couple of years ago, I went to Zach Galifianakis' house for a... I don't mean to drop names.
Oh, man.
Like that matters.
Well, you weren't, believe me.
But I I go over there on 4th of July, and a couple of kids, Nick Schwartzen and this other guy, I keep forgetting his name. It's stupid. Why is it bothering? Oh, whatever. They show up with a trunkload of stuff that they picked up in Nevada. All right? Trunkload of Roman candles. Now, I'd always heard about these kind of fireworks when I was a kid. They're like, they're illegal. You can't get those. Well, he got them. And let me tell you something. He gave me one Roman candle, and you know, if you hold them, you can shoot them at people. Mm. All right. Well, he gave me one. And, dude, I was hooked. For the next 2 hours, I was blowing things up. Flames were coming out of both hands. We were shooting things up in the air. Things were exploding. And literally, I got such a buzz, I was frazzled. I was covered in soot and sweating. And I was like, can we do this every day? Why can't we do this every day? This is the best time I've ever had. We made a complete mess out of Zach's sidewalk with, you know, how sulfur burns. Asphalt that hilarious. He probably never got that stuff off. But I'm saying the one day a year, as long as people don't get hurt, it's a good time, man. And I was sitting at home last night. I was actually on John Amato's site, Crooks and Liars. Of all things, he posted some Stevie Ray Vaughan and Albert King clip on there. Excellent. Guy's got good taste in music. But I just check out. I go outside. I see things blowing up in the air. Sometimes they sound a little close, sometimes further away. But again, they didn't hurt my cats. And I hope no one else got hurt, but I'll indulge it one day a year.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fine.
Even a little in the morning. Today I heard a little, too.
It's just, you know, they're setting fires in the park, you know, palm trees and stuff, animals going, rah! You know, what the hell is that? What use is that? Do it in a way that's not going to hurt people or drive them nuts or, you know, turn them into killers like I'm about to turn into.
Hurt people... I think you're right. Drive them nuts. People like you are always going to be driven nuts by this stuff.
I'm just thinking, what are the Iraqi war vets coming home, you know, in the middle of July 4th, and they experience this kind of crap going on from people who've never held a gun in their lives?
Maybe some of those Iraqi war vets were enjoying shooting off some Roman candles, or they brought back some rocket-propelled grenades.
Hey, you're right.
John Amato coming up next.
It's not a crime to publish classified information, and this is one of the things Mr. Bennett keeps telling people that it is. But in fact, there are some narrow categories of information you can't publish: certain signals, communications, intelligence, the names of covert operatives, and nuclear secrets. Now, why isn't it a crime? I mean, some people would like to make casino gambling a crime, but it is not a crime. Why isn't it not a crime? Because the framers of the Constitution wanted to protect the press so that they could perform a basic role in government oversight.
Welcome back, folks. It's the Mark Maron Show, the website crooksandliars.com. If you were just listening just there, that was Dana Priest from Meet the Press on Sunday, kicking some Bill Bennett ass. I mean, Bill Bennett is such a colossal right-wing doofus, and he doesn't give a crap about the Founding Fathers. They're trying to frame the Founding Fathers and the birthplace of this democracy as some sort of arcane, non-important thing that happened in a different, it was a completely different eon, as if age takes away from what they represented. It's unbelievable. Well, the website Crooks and Liars, where that came from, .com, crooksandliars.com, don't put where that came from in there. Is a clearinghouse of video news clips that call the right out on their crap. Thank God it exists, because I don't have the time or the know-how to watch all the politically relevant clips that come out over the week. Media gnome and web posting wizard John Amato is our weekly guest, always. I keep reading the same intro because I think it's important that he gets set up properly. How are you, John?
I'm very good. How are you, Mark? How was your holiday?
The holiday was okay. You know, I had a better time than my buddy Jim here. I live in Highland Park. I don't know where you are, but I just got to go out in my front yard and watch the entire hillside just blow up with fireworks.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I'm by, you know, put close to the ocean. And it was just, I was just resting. I was just, I'm a big fan of House MD, so I had about 5 episodes. Yeah, that's how exciting my day off was. But I just did a House MD marathon.
Oh, yeah. No, I got to watch, like, high-end fireworks that I have no idea where they are gotten or where they come from. But, like, you know, multiple explosion ones, big ones.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot that goes on down here. I mean, all along the coast. It's California over here is great for fireworks.
Did you reflect at all on Independence Day about the nature and the virtue of our founding fathers and what this country represents, as easily as Bill Bennett might have wanted to just dismiss them? Do you know what's amazing about the beginning of that, about what he said, is that he just says, well, you know, this is basically written 200 years ago. They're trying to frame the Constitution as this outdated piece of paper that has no bearing on what's going on now.
Yeah, they never make any sense, because remember with the Supreme Court, first they want the Supreme Court to make all the rulings based on that, you know, archaic document, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, don't make any new law. It's like, you know, but now, you know, they're trying to suppress the press. So now, you know, who cares about the Constitution?
But Dana Priest just tore him a new one. It was unbelievable. Takes a personal shot at him with the casino thing and just basically makes the proper constitutional case that it's necessary. It's necessary, and there is a context for what is allowed and what isn't allowed. And most people who are smart knew that this didn't compromise anything. This is just them going after what they see the liberal outpost and demonizing the press. So people, they're making it almost impossible for their moronic minions to ever have the hope of getting real information or knowing what that looks like.
Yeah, really, he really did look like a child on that show, and you know, he's usually a bloviator.
Yeah.
But the thing about the Rusty Show, even when they have those round tables, is it's not a yell fest. Everyone goes around and talks. No, if it's an opinion, and you could see, I have like an eight minutes up from that round table, and he kept trying to cut people off, and Andrea Mitchell was saying, wait your turn, and he was just acting like a whiny-ass titty baby,
yeah,
that we call them, and I was shocked, really. When I looked at that lineup, I said, here we go again. Yeah, you got John Harwood, Wall Street Journal, right? You know, Andrea Mitchell, and Dana Priest, and they're not talkers. This guy's a bloviator. And when she came out with that casino gambling thing, I fell off my chair.
Bang! And William Sapphire, that's how you pronounce his name,
William,
right?
Sapphire,
yeah,
exactly.
He's a right winger, but he's like, you know, on this topic, you know, they're definitely, you know, the Supreme Court was right.
No, and it was great having Dana Priest sit next to Bill Bennett, because Bill Bennett's been yelling that, you know, instead of her getting a Pulitzer Prize, she should be thrown in jail. And it was great that she was ready for him and she was prepared, and she really made him look like a fool, because she knows what she's talking about. This is about reporting journalism. Now, this is why we have a free press. His whole shtick is to protect the cult of Bush.
Right. I don't know why I just said the Supreme Court, but Sapphire was they were all up against Bennett because they knew that that it was the right thing to do for the New York Times. Also, along the same lines, you've got Cy Hirsch on there in one of his rare TV appearances, talking about Iran and about how the U.S. military is saying to this administration, to the neocon death cult, that even if we went in on an airstrike, the possibilities of us really taking out their nuclear capability or whatever they're working on is slim. You know what I'm starting to realize, John? I don't know if you're picking up on it, too. Like this morning, you've got a response to Korea shooting off those tests, even though they were basically told by President Bush a week or so ago that there will be reprisals, that there was all this saber rattling. And the bottom line is, on the front of Iran and the front of North Korea, is both of these countries are actually calling his bluff. And thank God to this point, there's been no reprisals, but you start to realize that maybe the military really is overextended in Iraq, and in this respect, all this bluffing is really revealing that something has to change.
Yeah, it's really telling. I mean, you know, obviously the major rocket failed, or you know, missile.
And the big one, yeah. I think it was encased in an old VW van.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah. It had the peace logo on it. Yeah, Grateful Dead. But you know, but I mean, you know, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, they tried to sweep it by. You know. Yeah, it's not a missile. It's just some hippies we're trying to get rid of.
But I mean, it's you know, the rhetoric that the Bush administration used all about Iraq, you know, infuriates the rest of, you know, the axis of evil. And yeah, they don't, you know, they're in a position like, I guess, you know, Mr. Ill there, you know, just wanted to make some noise. I mean, he timed it. It was all publicity. It was the July 4th. And shoot off, I mean, these Scuds are just typical. We know that he's got these Scud missiles.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're just basically laughing at us. That's the way I look at it. It's you know, and what's the administration going to say? Well, we're analyzing the data.
Yeah, yeah. And also that, you know, they're going to be ostracized even more now. We're going to outlaw kimchi here stateside.
It's like, how many more sanctions? I mean, look, you know what? Nobody wants to see these guys have any of this stuff, but, yeah. you know, we've been put in this position now where we're almost impotent. I mean, the you know, the country needs Viagra, like Rush.
Rush is going, he's apparently, as of this morning, there's not going to be any charges against him, but you have a personal crusade against him, don't you?
Well, you know, not even so much against him, it's, you know, against the doctors, too, because, you know, doctors do not write scripts in other doctors' names and give it to a patient. It doesn't happen. I know it. And you know, to be honest, look, you know, alcoholics, drug addicts, I mean, it's serious business. And if, A, I called the Palm Beach County State Attorney's Office spokesman today, Mike Edmondson, and, you know, he wouldn't really talk a lot about the original plea deal, but, you know, we talked about doctor shopping, and I said, you know what, if there was no doctor shopping, then his doctor should have been brought up on charges, because no sane doctor would prescribe insane amounts of Oxycontin to anybody.
Right. Well, but I mean, this is the Viagra thing is what it is. I don't think it's classified in the same way as Oxycontin.
No, it's not. But you know what? You don't write prescriptions up like that. You know, I called the Florida Medical Board, and they wanted me to give them the doctor's names immediately.
Yeah.
Because it's unethical. They told me it was illegal. And so what I found out is that because the scripts were done in Miami, Dade County, they couldn't do anything about it. But, you know, what I was told is that they're seriously going to look at these doctors. And you know what? I mean, I've called, look, being in Los Angeles, I call Beverly Hills, you know, specialists that deal with these stars, and they don't write scripts to you know, so that, you know, hide who the person is receiving the medication.
Yeah.
You know, these doctors are part of the problem, and they need to be. I mean, I have a lot of great doctors. I've had some bad ones, but they cannot get away with this type of behavior. I mean,
yeah. So you're pretty sad Ken Lay's gone? Did you shed some tears this morning?
No, I guess I didn't.
Do you think he killed himself?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think, you know, I mean, when you see all the people that got hurt from these men, you know, life savings of people that will never have retirement again. I mean,
yeah, they were going to bring them back to life just to let them die again, just so those people would.
You know, it's like these big corporate guys that rip off all their employees.
Yep.
That are, you know, are as worse criminals as these pedophiles.
Nice.
Because they destroy people's lives in much the same way a pedophile destroys a child's life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have no sympathy. And then they get this treatment from the press. You know, these people should be vilified for their behavior,
yeah.
And yet, you know, they're exalted.
Yeah, no, they're the worst. All right, so now I want to thank you personally. Last night, like, I'm going, I know you're coming on the show, so I'm poking around the site, see what's up. And there's this great clip from Stevie Ray Vaughan, Albert King. Where you just, is all this stuff up on YouTube and you pull it off of there? Where's all that stuff come from, man? It's just like, it's amazing to see on a sort of a musical wonk note, just how much he Stevie Ray lifted from Albert King and how much he stuck down Albert King's throat in that clip. Literally, he was like, you know what, I'm going to out Albert King you.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I got the chance. I saw Stevie Ray Vaughan in his 89 tour with Jeff Beck, and I was a Jeff Beck fan at the time. And I'd heard a little bit of Stevie Ray.
Yeah.
But I came out of that concert. It was up in Oakland. I came out of that concert a Stevie Ray Vaughan fan for life. I mean, seeing him live, the energy that came out of his guitar, out of those amps, was incredible. It was moving. And, you know, I rarely have I seen a musician do that to me. Since, you know, I am a musician, so I listen a little differently than most people. And so there is a lot of cool stuff on YouTube right now because of the popularity of the little music club I started. You know, I'm starting to get record labels now that are sending me, you know, stuff that I can post.
All right, well,
Concord Jazz is sending me.
Oh, great, great.
Oh, we got a guy here, the music club. Anyway, there will be a lot more on the music club.
Thanks so much, John Amato. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, brother.
Take it easy.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, man. So we will be back with Mort Mortensen. So stay with us, folks.
Ripped from the Deadlines, Mort Mortensen's Weekly Remembrance, next.
Hey, he's been dethroned as the number one wiener eater, Mark Maron.
I have been laying off the weenies. I was having a little bit of a turkey dog problem there. It's a nice snack. I was enjoying them. But that now, since I've been dieting a bit, it's been different. I've had to, because I need to get down to where you are. You're 155. You know, if I weigh...
I'm 150 to 55. I'll go, you know, give or take a pound.
Yeah, you're thin, man. Anyway, so you are. You know, but I'm not. We'll talk about that later. Because
I'm not thin.
I'm going to read an email in a little while, and we're going to get into it. Okay.
Thin has negative, you know, pejorative.
Yeah, you're a little thin. What could be negative about being thin?
Well, people always say thin. You know, you're skinny. Look at her; she's skinny. When it's just kind of jealousy, because those people saying that are usually kind of overweight.
But so you're saying thin has negative connotations because you're thin?
I think it does nowadays. I think it's more so. But they're
not
like
negative.
50 years ago, less people were overweight. And
I'm not doing this again.
You know?
Yeah.
Now it's just like everybody's walking around. Dur-dur-dur-dur-dur.
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know? And they make that noise when they walk.
Dum-dee-dum-dee-doo.
Falling over.
Here I go. Luckily, I didn't hurt myself again. Thank God I'm fat. Yeah.
Oh, man, you're going to get in trouble.
What do you mean? You started it. Every week we reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Man, one of those weekends, huh?
Yeah, it is, man. It's really sinus congestion.
Sure,
hey,
sure.
Good thing this show's going on for another year or so.
Yeah, we need to talk after the show.
What?
Yeah, we'll talk.
Ken Lay, math expert. Ken Lay, the man who founded Enron Corporation and cheated thousands of employees out of their pensions, topped himself last night by cheating thousands of hungry prisoners on their chance to make him their bitch.
Yeah.
Lay apparently died of a massive coronary at his vacation home after unsuccessfully trying to funnel somebody else's life savings up his pulmonary artery. Lay's servants were reportedly so upset when they found the body that they barely had time to light a couple of Roman candles between his legs before calling paramedics.
Yeah,
4th of July.
4th of July, yeah. Woo! Fireworks, yeah.
George Bush's largest contributor, Lay was originally chosen to be the president's Secretary of Treasury in 2000, but turned it down when it was argued he could commit more crimes in the private sector.
He's dead now.
No.
Dead.
Dead. Family members are consoling themselves with the thought that Lay is now driving the seventh level of hell into bankruptcy.
perhaps causing some blackouts, rolling blackouts in hell.
A lot of that, or, you know?
Yeah.
Exuberant.
I'm just adding to it. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, man.
Yeah. You all right?
More the merrier.
Yeah. Maybe these flowers are causing this reaction. You sound really stuffed up today.
Lilies. It's lilies from Ken Lay's Kenny Boys.
Yeah. Funeral.
Lenny Weinrib, voice of HR Puff and Stuff.
Oh.
Lenny Weinrib, who for 3 years helped write and voice the beloved children's fantasy show HR Puff and Stuff, set on Living Island, is now on Dead Island.
Oh.
Yeah. Weinrib reportedly died of a stroke when his overstuffed Nerf refrigerator and the talking grandfather clock played keep away with his heart medicine.
That's wrong.
Everything's, you know, yeah, alive in the...
Yeah, in the living world.
Yeah.
I remember H&R Puff and Stuff. Puff and Stuff.
Puff and... Yeah. Although he had a long and exciting career in TV and movies, Weinrib said nothing could ever equal the thrill of the first time he accidentally sat on Freddy the Flute.
He's living flute, right?
Yeah, right.
Living his life.
You sit on that,
yeah.
What's going to happen?
Yeah.
It just opened up the possibilities, that's all I'm saying.
Sure, sure.
Weinrib also did the voices for other Sid and Marty Krofft productions like Magic Mongo, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, Dr. Shrinker, Lidsville, and the groundbreaking We've Run Out of Veiled Drug References.
That's when it went bad.
Yeah.
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 Oh, God. I know. It's rough.
Achoo.
Hey, Gesundheit. Sorry.
Yeah, thank
I'm
you.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was a little swell on the jaw there.
Weinrib requested his head be expanded to outlandishly hideous proportions and his dead body be animated from the inside by midgets.
Midgets? Was he run by midgets?
On LSD.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you remember the... I was trying to remember the theme song, H&R Puff and Stuff. Do you remember it?
Puff and Stuff.
Is that it?
Yeah,
no. You're just making it up.
No, that's Via Allegra, I think.
Oh. Because I can... H&R Puff and Stuff. He had the big old the head with...
We're on the HR Puffin' Stuff, Living Island. We've got big heads, come and see. Bring your family, but forget your troubles, cause something there.
Cause we're high.
High.
No.
Hey! Fly your freak flag, cause we're drugged.
Yeah, that's
it. Dee dee, ba da ba dugged.
Don't hate the puppets, man. Oh, we gotta end this.
Oh, thanks. This has been the Weekly Remembrance. Until next week, this is Martin Martinson saying.
Oh, man. That's just awful. That's just awful. What is that? I hear some, is that clarinet? Bill picked a bunch of new music. This sounds like Garrison Keillor music.
And we'll be back with the news from Lake Wobegon in just a minute.
Eau de Cat, Mark Maron.
Yeah, Eau de Cat, that's for sure. You hear that? You hear that screeching anarchy? Take you back? That is DOA. There it comes. There you go. Man, I feel like just quitting now, leaving the show. Canadian punks, that's right, folks. What might be the original Canadian punk band, DOA, was founded by Joey Keithley in 1978. Joey and the fellas are still going relatively strong today, some 25 years later, and Joey has a new book out called I Bleephead. Man, I feel like such an idiot because I can't say that, even though I said it before in the first segment, but I'm not going to say it again because I know the more I say it, the bigger problems we're going to have, you know, beeping it out. But it's I Bleephead, A Life in Punk. He's also a political activist, an environmental activist, and a former Green Party candidate up in Canada who pulled about 15% of the vote. Welcome to the show, Joey Keithley.
Hi, Mark. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being... So you're up in Vancouver right now?
Yes, I am. We're just getting prepared to leave for a big political rally peace event this weekend.
Vancouver, man, you're so lucky. That place is like it's like a real city, only without crime.
Well, it's gotten a little worse in the past few years, but it's a real nice place. It's pretty clean cut, and it's pretty safe, and it's a beautiful setting, obviously, with the mountains here.
Yeah, I mean, I was up there briefly, and the one thing I noticed is that, just walking down the street, it's a beautiful city, but there was a tremendous lack of fear in just pedestrian activity that you find here in the States.
Yeah, I think the thing about Vancouver is that back in the late 60s, early 70s, we had a mayor who had some vision, and one of the things, he stopped the freeways from going right through downtown. So now we have, and we kind of have a livable inner downtown and central city. Right? So, like, downtown doesn't vacate at night. There's still people walking around there. So if you're walking around there to a club or to a restaurant, you don't walk out and have to make a two-block walk and think you're going to get robbed on the way type thing. There's other people around type thing.
And I think, if I recall correctly, you can still smoke in most places, can't you?
That they've tried to ban that off and on. BC, fortunately, I'm an ex-smoker, but BC's got one of the lowest rates of smoking in all of North America, in the world, I think. Actually.
Why do you guys? You guys, I'm moving up there, man. It's just it seems like. You think I could get a job up there? What's the attitude towards Americans these days? Can an expat American get a job in Vancouver, maybe doing radio?
I think there's room for you. There's room for you here. We need somebody to stir things up a little bit, right?
Well,
a little bit conservative on the airwaves here.
Are they
conservatives down there? But
what is your general impression of in terms of with your ear to the ground up there in Canada and the peers that you have? What's the general sense of America these days?
Well, I mean, everybody's been really. George Bush has been unpopular up here from day one, and kind of not just him, but kind of just his conservative policies and the gang that's with him and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I don't want to pin it all on him. He's got lots of cohorts that are behind a lot of bad decisions about fighting wars and destroying the environment and stuff like that.
Yeah, I call them the neocon death cult.
Yeah, that's a pretty good title for him. Generally, people in Canada are a lot more liberal and a lot more. I don't know if they're more open minded than Americans, but we have a kind of a more liberal, open society, I guess, right?
What do you attribute that to? Because I notice that. I mean, even in Michael Moore's movies and when I've traveled to Canada, it just seems that it's a much more relaxed place. So what do you attribute that to? Do you know?
I'm not really sure. I think, one thing, when Canada was settled, the British, you're talking 150 years, 200 years ago,
yeah,
that it wasn't quite the Wild West shootout, everybody's got to have a gun mentality, right?
Yeah.
It was a bit more orderly in a sense. Now, I don't know if that breeds liberal thinking or not, right? But it's a funny thing. Canada's always had a kind of thing that, yeah, you should look out for your brother and sister a little bit and try and help them out. It isn't so much kind of the American credo like every man and woman for themselves type thing. Right?
Yeah. I think that initially there was supposed to be a little more everybody, hang out and take care of each other, and then something went wrong.
It's not to say it can't get repaired.
We're going to fix it.
We have gotten more Americanized as time has gone by because we end up with more conservatives running the government or. We don't quite have the same problem with the church trying to exert itself upon the legislation. They're strong up here, but not quite in the same way, although they're starting to get a lot of help from American, far-right evangelical groups like Focus on the Family and stuff like that.
Really? So that the NAFTA agreement is now bartering in religious ideology as well?
I hope not. I mean, I fought against NAFTA, but we pretty well kind of considered it. It's a dead issue. It's like it's a done deal, right? So, it's like all these like free trade agreements. The thing is that if they can work to help everybody, not just like rich people, then they're generally a good thing. But I think people just got to keep working on them all the time.
When you ran for the Green Party, what were you running for?
Well, I knew for one thing that I could involve my maverick style of people politics. And I wouldn't be encumbered by any cronyism or any bribes or anything like that. It seems we had never elected anybody, right? So
yeah.
There's no payoffs or anything like that. So basically, I was just trying to get across to people the idea that we should try and take care of the earth for now and for later.
Oh, that's a good idea. So now let's talk about DOA playing at this event this weekend. Explain to me what that event is. It sounded pretty compelling.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's called the Our Way Home Reunion. And back during the Vietnam War, there were like about 50,000 draft resistors that came up to Canada. And then ended up about 25,000 of them stayed and became Canadian citizens along
really?
The way type thing. And about 2 years ago, the city of Nelson, which is a tiny little town in the mountains in British Columbia, tried to erect like a statue monument to these draft resistors. And when Fox News and the Veterans of Foreign War and people like that heard about this,
yeah.
they kind of proposed an invasion of that area of Canada type thing. So the city of Nelson freaked out. And the council putting the statue up. But what's happened a couple years later, they have a reunion of all these people that maybe were involved as being draft resistors, and there's modern-day war resistors and people working for peace and stuff like that. And as it goes along, there's a bunch of entertainment of people that are kind of like-minded. So, strangely enough, we're sharing the stage with Buffy St. Marie.
Yeah, oh, you mean she doesn't generally open for you on the road?
This is not, it hasn't been a dual bill. We've talked about it before, but it hasn't quite worked that way.
So now what do you think? Do you got any numbers in your head as to how many current war resistors there are trying to seeking amnesty up there and what the status of that is?
Well, I know that since the Iraq War started, there's been less than 20 to 30 that I've heard about. And most of them have gotten turned back. Unfortunately, we've gotten like a lot tougher up here on that kind of thing. Whereas you think back to the late 60s and the early 70s, that people had in the States who didn't want to go fight in Vietnam, they either went to Canada or to Sweden, right?
Sure, yeah. And I had talked to one of these guys who was up there trying to get amnesty, and I knew that he was having trouble doing it, and he didn't know what his future was going to be.
Yeah, it's very up in the air, and the Canadian government, like I say, we aren't as liberal and free-flowing. Back at that time, we had a prime minister with a lot of vision. His name was Pierre Trudeau. And
he was great. He had the hot wife, right?
That's right, right, who was hanging out with the Rolling Stones, and that became a whole controversy.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't had a guy with that, a man or a woman with that kind of vision leading the country since, to put it that way, right?
Right. So let's talk about the book. Now, was that your nickname, Bleephead?
Yeah, that's right. I can't really say it over the air, and I guess you can. It's like one of those things that, but in the Spanish it would be Caca Cabeza.
Nice. Caca Cabeza.
So,
okay,
or,
that's better.
Or Demerit in French, or, you know what I mean, right?
What is it in French?
Tête de merde.
Oh, do you speak French?
They tried to teach us in school, but we're so far away from Quebec out here, I pretty well forgot it, once I got out of school.
So
they tried and they failed with me.
Yeah, I didn't. It didn't lock in with me either. So the book is just about your life in punk. Is punk still alive?
Yeah, it is. It's bigger and bigger. Basically, the book, I tried to talk about growing up and get involved in punk rock when I first started out, 77, 78, 79, and also tried to give an idea about kind of the activist stuff that we're involved in and playing squats in Europe and these different political movements. And I also tried to give an idea about all the dumb things that we did too, right? And there was plenty of them.
Yeah, well, you don't strike me as, you seem pretty healthy. You seem like you're in good shape from the pictures. You don't smoke anymore. You didn't seem to take the path of a lot of American punkers.
Well,
death.
I wanted to say something with the punk rock because I thought it was a fun thing. We had a couple goals in mind when we started. And, one of them was to cause a lot of trouble, and the other one was to drink a lot of beer, and the third one was to have a lot of fun. And I'm sure that's still kind of the modus operandi as we go along here, right?
Well, that's cool, man. I had one of your American counterparts on here, Joe Biafra.
He's a pal of mine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had him on the show. I can't say that we had a conversation, but he certainly did.
He's the talker. I've done shows with him before where he won't stop talking.
Yeah,
he's opening up, so we've had to go on and drown him out with feedback, and finally he goes, I guess DOA is going to play now.
I wish I had. I'll remember that next time I talk to him to just kick on your music and some feedback. So I tell you, I think you got the last great band name out of Canada, because something went wrong after you guys named your band. The Philosopher Kings, Nickelback. I mean, where the hell kind of names are those? I was literally up in Canada once watching their version of the MTV.
Yeah.
And this was before Nickelback became huge. And
yeah.
I'm watching all these bands, and they're all Canadian bands I never heard of. And I really had this thought, like, well, they're never going to get out of this country with these names. They've really got to start focusing on the names of their bands a little more.
Well, I think that what we've got to focus on more is trying to, I have to apologize to all Americans here for having, for us having helped, foisted Celine Dion onto your country and your consciousness.
I think
we got
rid of her though. I think sure, her impact is waning.
Well, she's down in Las Vegas. If you're ever driving through the desert, she's doing like a nightly stand there type thing.
Well,
right?
No, I know Vegas is like, it's like an hour plane's ride from here, and on a quiet night, you can actually hear her show here in Los Angeles.
Oh, that must be hard in the ears.
Hundreds of miles away. It pierces. What? My dogs get really upset.
Well, we'll work on the band names up here. I don't know if I'm ever elected prime minister, or at least mayor of Vancouver, maybe I can send out a directive and... Just I'll come up with some names and try and help them along.
Okay, thanks a lot, Joey. Joey Keithley, thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks, sir, Mark.
You take care, man.
Yeah,
all right.
Cheers.
Yeah, I don't know why I lied and said I had dogs. That's weird, because it was the dog whistle idea. It was just a joke, you know? Huh?
You heard dogs singing along.
What's happening now? Do you want to? What are we doing? I'm going to talk about this email. You pissed somebody off. You pissed a fat person off.
I can't believe I pissed somebody off.
You can, huh? And you pissed a.
What are you talking about?
We both pissed her off. We were insensitive to the fact. We'll be back.
Hey, he just came in first at Wimpleton.
Yeah, that's a good one. Wimpleton.
Wimpleton.
All right, a couple things I want to get in this segment if I can. I don't know. This is unsubstantiated, but possible. That according to Austrian sources, when Bush was just there in Vienna, the White House had a toilet security outfit, all right, which apparently the White House flies a special portable toilet when he's traveling for his personal use, even if he's staying in a hotel, because they are so concerned with security. They're concerned that somebody is going to take a presidential turd or perhaps some presidential pee water, analyze it, and find, you know, something that we should all probably know in terms of what this guy's ingesting. And apparently this is being presented on this website as a real thing, and it doesn't sound too far off to me. But it is kind of creepy, though, to picture that the president, even if he's staying at a five-star hotel, has to have somebody in a suit wheel in his special crapper, and then apparently they fly it back to Washington for disposal. Is that possible? I mean, does this sound completely crazy? I mean, if he's on all kinds of, like, special, King Monkey medications that, you know, his father's buddies over at Eli Lilly or Rumsfeld's buddies over at Serral are creating for him to maintain this disposition, or if he's drinking or whatever the hell is going on, this seems very possible that somebody, I don't know how somebody would rig it.
Fly it back to Washington and dispose of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that seems a little far-fetched.
I'm sure they just dump it over the ocean.
You mean from the Air Force One?
Yeah.
But you never know if there's somebody down there waiting with a catcher's mitt, with a poop mitt.
See, now you're being absurd.
Oh, you're right. But I mean, this seems possible.
I'm sure they collect it for the Presidential Library.
Or the Smithsonian.
Yes.
All right. Okay, listen to this. Let's get into this. Here's an email from Debbie. At the end of the show, which she was podcasting, upon a recommendation, my friend, she was referred to by her nephew. Oh, poor woman. She was listening, even talking to Svetlana, and then you and I were chatting here. I'm quoting the email now. I was absolutely livid after a couple of minutes. I got to listen to sanctimonious and proud fattest, I think my word, isn't it? Jim, and critical yet apologetic, you talk about being truly overweight, a subject neither of you know much about and certainly have never experienced. Fragile Jim even had this nerve to sound defensive lest anyone use the term skinny instead of slender. Man, oh man. But he was using fat and doughy. freely enough, as were you. Evidently, those of us who aren't slender vegetarians are just living our lives the wrong way completely. Mark, you said that you have to work so hard to maintain your weight, and poor you have to be careful not to lose so much weight that your wife thinks you feel like a crab person. Oh, please. You know what, Mark? I am a liberal Democrat trying to survive in Mean Gene Schmidt's congressional district and crazy Kenneth Blackwell's election-shifting petri dish of Ohio. Hell, Bob Ney and Bob Taft represent my state. It's embarrassing. Yet everywhere I turn, I'm surrounded by Kool-Aid-drinking, Bush-loving Republicans. I can hardly mention politics without being attacked, or as they like to call it, debated or challenged. I am also fat. Trust me when I say I know about being demonized and criticized. So I listen to Air America for support and humor, for voices of people who think like me, for a little comfort in a world rapidly being turned upside down and inside out, where I feel powerless, but maybe at least I'm not alone. I do not listen to hear two clueless men join in the tyranny of the fat. So may I recommend that the two of you cut it out? You already offended and lost at least one listener.
Well, you know what? She is not only fattest, but she is also sexist.
Mm.
You know, it's all two men.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not skinny.
Yeah.
I am perfect body mass weight index material here.
I don't know. I mean, we covered this. Did you do any research into that since I talked to you?
Sure did. You know,
did you?
5'11", 150 pounds on the average.
I think you're on the lower end of it because I'm 5'11" too, and I'm on the topper end of it. But maybe you're on the lower end.
It's still good. You know, it's not. You know, a lot of people who are overweight. You know,
but what do you have to say to her? Man, she's trying to live a good life. She's thinking the right way.
I'm saying good for her.
She's eating well, and we offended her.
I don't know if she's eating well. If she's staying overweight. Something's either biologically wrong, perhaps, and out of her control.
So then, if that's the case, you feel bad, right?
Of course I do. But you know, there's more than just taking pills to you can do to help that. It's like type 2 diabetics need to do more than take pills. They need to exercise and eat.
There you go. We will be back with Reza Safarnejad from Iran, who lives here now.
Now he's being sued by Reese Witherspoon. Mark Maron.
Thanks, man. Thank you, Jim. I was just trying to find out like this because I think you're skinny, man, and I'm trying to find out if there's a way I can check it out.
Okay.
But I did a Google search and I'll have to deal with it in a minute because I can't deal with it right now. I have a guest, folks. Along with his wife, Katrin Kasiri. Reza Safarnejad has written a book telling the story of his wife's exodus from Iran over a period of years and the family struggles that surrounded that exodus. Her sister had sought to marry a Muslim, which was out of their religion, which was Baha'i, and her father forbade it, and her sister committed suicide. In the middle of all this, Iran was becoming unstable and bloody as the Muslim fundamentalists began to overthrow the government. Then there was the war with Iraq, and during this, Reza's wife, Katrin, if I'm pronouncing it properly, made her way to Pakistan and then here to America. Reza is with us on the phone today. Welcome to the show, Reza Safarnejad.
Hello, Mark. It's great to be on your show.
Did I pronounce everything right?
It's actually Reza. But...
Reza? All right. They told me, too, right before I said it, and I still said it wrong, and that's just a stylistic thing that I have a problem with.
Sure, not a problem.
All right. So I've talked to artists from Iran before, and I guess what many people don't realize is that despite the radical government there is still a thriving a cultural community, and is there any activism that you know of going on?
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely... a fairly good-sized pro-democracy movement, especially amongst the students and academics.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you know, they're branded as liberals and left-wing people who don't go with the religious theocracy, and they're shut out of the government as much as possible.
Wow, that sounds really familiar. that almost echoes exactly what we talk about every day on this show about America. Is that possible?
It's very possible, you know. All of our friends who've read the book are amazed at how similar the actions of the United States government, the Bush administration, was after September 11th to Iran's government.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about that specifically. So you're talking about after the overthrow of the Shah, right?
Correct.
And what were some of those things that were implemented almost immediately?
Well, obviously the well, actually, it's not all that clear, but Iran's revolution was not a one-sided thing. It wasn't Muslim fundamentalists overthrowing the Shah. It was a lot of different groups, including pro-democracy students and academics.
Mm-hmm.
But very quickly after Iran's revolution, the fundamentalists started to kind of get rid of these guys, calling them names. When the Iran-Iraq war started, you know, the easiest way to do it was, hey, you guys are unpatriotic for questioning the government's action, and kind of outlawed pretty much all the other parties, you know, being pro-communist, pro-democracy, pro just about anything, and took over.
Okay, well, why did the people stand for that? Were the numbers with them? I mean, were the secular people and other political affiliations outnumbered by these fundamentalists?
I think partly it was being, I don't know if they were outnumbered. I think it was after Iran's revolution. One of the very first things they did was they told everybody to turn in their guns. People mm-hmm. had armed themselves to fight against the Shah, and that was the first thing they did.
Mm-hmm.
Once people are disarmed, now they can go ahead and move around and get rid of all these smaller parties. And I think part of it was the religious fundamentalists were more zealous. You know, they stuck to it, and they kind of went with it, versus a lot of ordinary people who were supporting democracy after the revolution kind of threw their hands up in the air and said, all right, everything's great, let's go home.
Right. So you're saying that, like, the persistence and focus of religious zealots changed the cultural language to such a degree that people who were secular and actually embraced, intellectual pursuits, academics, theater, the arts, women having jobs and stuff like that were made to look like they were somehow treasonous.
Absolutely. The word of the day back then was counter-revolutionary.
Interesting. You know, so that, and then I'm assuming that in terms of, you know, how long ago did you live there when you were younger? Yeah.
Yes, my family left Iran in 1985.
Oh, okay.
85.
So now you're growing up with this, and what is there, like, one national radio station? I mean, was the news and the media fairly insulated to Iranian information? And once these people took over, they were able to kind of steal the media and change the public mind like that.
Well, that was definitely part of the big move after Iran's revolution was, these people who work for foreign companies are filling our ears with junk. So the first thing they did was they didn't shut down things like Times magazine. What they did was they would censor it because they said, well, you know, they got naked pictures of women or half naked pictures of women, and we started seeing them black out pictures. But very quickly we saw, I remember very vividly that they started blacking out entire articles. And within a year or so, Times just didn't exist in Iran anymore.
Wait, so you got Time magazine, an Iranian version with things blacked out, like literally, like it looked like a CIA report that they edited?
Exactly.
Really?
It looked like somebody went through it with a marker and just blacked them out.
So that must have been sanctioned by Time magazine. They couldn't have done it separately for every issue. They must have been printing it within Iran, or did they actually have people that were exiting it out?
I honestly don't know how that worked. I just remember seeing that and seeing how after a while it just kind of went away.
Wow, that's curious. Go ahead.
And then you have the media that the government took over all the media and said, you know, this can be a tool of foreign espionage. So we're going to take over in the name of national security. And, of course, now everybody speaks the same language.
Right. And we live in a country where they're trying to destroy the only paper, one of the great newspapers of our nation, whose news resources are invaluable or completely priceless in terms of fighting this. And the same kind of thing happens here. But I'm very curious. I'm going to have to research that, Reza, in terms of because I know Google's going into China. They're making certain concessions to abide by the Chinese government. And I wonder if Time magazine went into Iran and made certain concessions and enabled them to X that stuff out just to keep business going. That would be, wow.
That's very possible, because you're right. There's no way they could have, you know, summarized that. They would have marked that hundreds or thousands of copies.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your wife's story, because that is what the book is about. And it seems like, as a member of the Baha'i faith, what was religious persecution like early on, right after the revolution? Was there a sense that she had to leave?
I don't think she personally and her family felt like they had to leave right away. There were certainly a lot of religious minorities in Iran, such as Jewish, Baha'is, Christians, and Zoroastrians, who left Iran almost immediately because, you know, you don't want to live in a country named the Islamic Republic when you're not a Muslim. Before, to give you a little background, even before Iran's revolution, there was some tension between Muslims and Baha'is, because Muslims don't accept Baha'is as a true religion. But it got much worse after the revolution, after this government took over, because very slowly and quietly, by the way, they started acting against Baha'is. Things like they fired all the Baha'is back in early 80s, if I remember correctly, maybe 82 or 81. Soon after Iraq War started, under the name of cleansing the government of all unpatriots and people and people who cooperate with terrorists or something like that.
Really? They used that kind of language?
I think the word of, instead of terrorists, they used the word foreign espionage. That was, again, word of the day back then.
God, it sounds like the rule book for how the neocons are running this country.
I think it's the best way to create a theocracy and meanwhile kind of give everybody the impression that you're doing what's right for the country and you're saving the people.
And still accommodating business interests that are willing to abide by your particular rules.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
that's
business
mind
is business.
Now, Baha'i, that's an interesting religion. That's sort of like the best of all religions put into one.
I certainly kind of think so. They're very peaceful people. They do not believe in fighting or wars. They don't like the idea of generally speaking, the idea of governments and things like that. They think God kind of should rule the world. It's a very idealistic religion, but half of my family on my father's side are Baha'i. Just really wonderful people.
Now, in terms of going back, now, like the people I've talked to, a couple of authors from Iran have said that they kind of almost look at the government like they figured out ways to live around them. Like they'll just honor their rules if there's one of them hanging around, and they gave me the sense that they're sort of a laughingstock, even though they're having nuclear standoffs with the American government. But the people that live there have gotten used to this theocratic system, and they find ways around it, and they kind of mock it publicly at this point. Is that true?
It's very true. It's true, but at the same time, situations change quickly.
Yeah.
Back in the early 80s, the government used the war with Iraq as a way of clamping down and killing anybody who spoke against them.
Yeah.
Once Iran's first leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, died, things got a lot more relaxed because this new government of people was more interested in staying in power and making money and getting rich than anything else. Unfortunately, since this new president, Ahmadinejad, has come to power, he seems to be more hell-bent on going back to the old days of warmongering and kind of pushing his own agenda.
Yeah, saber-rattling.
Exactly.
Now, do you still have people in Iran, relatives and whatnot?
I have some relatives, a few relatives.
Are they afraid?
They are. They are. I think people of Iran are genuinely afraid. They've seen what happened in Iraq, and it's not so much that we took over Iraq that worries them. It's the way we've handled Iraq since then that worries them even more. They're worried that, you know, if there's a war, the country's going to just fall into this total and continuous chaos for years to come.
But don't you think, just to get political on a second, that the alignment between the Iranian theocratic leadership and the predominantly Shia theocratic leadership in Iraq would stifle a conflict? I know there's a lot of talk of a conflict, but it seems that the religious leaders in Iraq are so deeply aligned with those in Iran that for America to take a shot at Iran now would destabilize the government that they helped put in place in Iraq.
It would, and it's hard to tell who that's going to benefit and who's going to hurt more. The current government in Iraq is practically Iranian.
Yeah.
The majority of them, including the current prime minister, literally drove across the border from Iran after living in Iran for 20 years.
Yeah.
Being a guest of the Ayatollah Khomeini and people after that to come over and take over this country.
So that's crazy.
We're kind of fooling ourselves to say, you know what, we put a government in place that's going to be democratic or whatever.
Yeah.
They're practically the Iranian government over there.
I don't know what the hell's going to happen. But I tell you, and your wife's all right, and the book's going okay, and she's you guys are both, you're good, right?
Mostly for for the most part, you know, it's hard to tell. The book is doing well. We're actually not even at the official release date, but the book's already selling, and a couple of bookstores have picked them up. And you know, there are a lot of people. I think the more open-minded people read the book and they love it and they see the lessons in there and they want to learn more about Baha'is in Iran and you know, the political situation and all that. And then you have a set of closed-minded people who are actually calling us with hate mail and whatever. And
Iranians?
On every side.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of hate mail? Like what?
More, I think we've had a couple of recent episodes of Iranian Baha'is who've taken exception to, why did you say your father drinks? You know, that belittles Baha'is. Now, well, that's really not the story of the book. The story of the book is around how he grew as a person, how he learned, how he went from, you know, how
right.
he went from the tragedy of
right.
his daughter dying because he wouldn't let her marry a Muslim to, you know, later Katrine married me.
Yeah,
I'm certain a lot of Baha'i, and he was okay with it.
Well, that's interesting that even in the Baha'i faith, these peaceful religions, they get a little annoyed when they assume that you're taking shots at their religion.
Yeah, but overall, I think Baha'is are generally very open-minded people, especially compared to a lot of other religious people.
I think
they're much more open-minded.
Okay, Reza Safarnejad, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. The book is Veiled Souls. It's available now. I don't know. We talked a lot about Iran and a little bit of it about the book, but enough to wet your whistle. Okay, I'm going to talk about something in a minute. I don't know. I'm going to talk about a guy from a place.
Hey, he once threw a pig's head into a bowling alley. Mark Maron.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you, man. That long weekend thing, you feel kind of screwed up today. You better just take the whole week off, but then we'd only have 7 more shows.
I'm hungover.
There were 6.
So I got real drunk this weekend.
You did?
Yeah, sure as hell.
You got wasted?
Absolutely.
I didn't.
Drunk and stoned.
You got stoned, too?
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been nice. I miss that. I miss getting drunk.
Nah, you feel bad at, you know, the day after.
I feel bad anyways. I didn't do anything wrong. And I still feel bad. I still feel a little hungover. You know, this whole thing with the show going away and in terms of how Air America, you know, the whole fiasco of being pushed out of the mornings by that Danny Goldberg fella, I finally found an analogy that works for me in terms mm-hmm. of what it was like being at Air America when that happened. It's like your mom who's divorced. Meets a new guy who's abusive, but she's in love with him and lets him live with you.
You know, I like that.
And yeah. And then all of a sudden he's gone now, and your mom's saying, "I'm sorry, honey. I'm sorry the way that he treated you. But you know, I still love you. And but you know, from that point on, you're damaged a little bit, and you doubt your mother."
Yeah, I don't resent Danny Goldberg anymore because I'm firm subscriber to the "hey, the buck stops here" thing, and
yeah.
the buck stops at the board. The board made all this. This is, you know, they made all this happen.
Yeah,
Danny Goldberg was just part of their plan.
You know, according to this, a healthy body mass index for an adult generally falls between 18.5 and 25. Mm. If your BMI is over 25, you're probably overweight. Now, I weigh about a buck 80. All right, so that says, and a buck 80 gives me about 25.2. body weight index, but if I'm at 175 pounds, it's only 24.5. If I wanted to get it around 20, which is around the middle of what is healthy for an adult, I'd have to be like 160 pounds, which would make me look ridiculous. My head would get—I'd look like ET. My head would get all big. My eyes would bug out. I'd talk like him because I'd be so weak.
I don't know, man. You know,
ET.
How healthy people look. I'm 20.9. You know?
I know, but you're thin. You are. I'm not.
I don't know. I guess thin. Thin in.
Kolar is probably negative numbers, and he's like emaciated.
How about just kind of like normal?
Huh?
How about normal instead of thin? You know, because thin has really negative connotations.
Negative connotations for other people, not for you.
It's like, how many times you've been, hey, put some meat on your bones, have a hamburger.
But that's not your problem. And those are, like you said, those are people that resent you for being thin. That's all. But if you get too thin, people get concerned because they're like, you look a little bad. There's something, there is, you can look too gaunt.
That's, you know, that's a meat industry myth.
No, it's not. Bill looks a little gaunt to me. I'm sure he's healthy. But, you know, you look at him, he's disturbingly thin.
That's the drugs having leached the color out of his system over the last 40 years.
Let's do this. Let's do these. All right, here's your short order news to be informed. And Bill lived longer than all of us. You watch Donut Boy. Enron Corporation founder Kenneth Lay, who was convicted of helping perpetuate one of the most sprawling business frauds in U.S. history, died Wednesday of a heart attack in Colorado, though it is more accurate to say that God shut off his power. His body will be given, cut up, and served to the countless people whose lives he ruined. It's not really revenge, it's just that they need something to eat. A CIA unit that had hunted for Osama bin Laden and his top deputies for a decade has been disbanded, according to a report in the New York Times. President Bush has amended his pledge to get bin Laden dead or alive to getting him dead, alive, or whatever. A 160-pound Japanese man set a new record for devouring 53 3/4 Frankfurters in 12 minutes to win the annual Independence Day hot dog eating competition on Coney Island. Yet another immigrant coming over here and taking work away from fat Americans. Can't the INS do something about this guy? That was the nicest joke. The other ones are just heinous.
Huh? You can't do one?
I'll do one. This is a new record for wiener gobbling, shattering the previous record held by George Michael.
Wiener gobbling. Funny phrase, wiener gobbling.
Yeah, I know, but we just... It's a gay joke.
No, it's just, you know...
You're right.
Gobbling wieners is funny.
Yeah, I guess.
Women laugh at wieners, the male thing.
Yeah, wieners. All right, Carlos Alzaraki tomorrow, very funny guy. Nick Hexum, the lead singer from the band 311. And Carlos is on Reno 911. 911-311. What up with that? Good night, sheeple.